Hey there, listeners. Welcome to the Leadership is Changing podcast. My name is Dennis Giannoutsis and I'm your host. Had a wonderful interview with a gentleman by the name of Samuel Drawshack. And Sam, as I was calling him throughout the interview, is the co-founder and chief process scientist at an organization called Trivel. Now, he and others talk about and they work with organizations around business, processes, and so forth. And one thing we did talk about was about bringing together business, people, and technology. And we had a great conversation around relation to AI and data and where that's going. And in particular, where is it going for leaders? So it was an awesome discussion, very interesting. So sit back and enjoy.
Welcome to Leadership is Changing. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change. This is taking your leadership to another level by finding the balance between executive excellence and personal well-being through stories that inspire real change. It's time to adapt in our fast-moving world when leadership is changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsis.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome to another wonderful episode of the Leadership is Changing podcast. Great to have you here with us. I've got a great guest with us, and his name is Samuel Drawshack, and I'm going to be calling him Sam today. So, Sam, a massive welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's good. Now, whereabouts in the world are you today?
Today, I am in Palmyra, Virginia, and I live in Richmond, Virginia, so I'm a Virginia-based.
Oh, nice. Okay, and so, very good. And have you always been in Virginia?
So I was born and raised in Virginia. I actually spent a time 5 years in Manhattan in New York City. Mm-hmm. And then I also lived for a bit on the West Coast. So during COVID, it's an interesting fact. My wife and I actually sold our house and we were living in an RV full time, just traveling the United States. So I've just gotten back because we had our first child last year. So that's my arc.
Oh, cool. Congrats. Having a first child, that's good. But also traveling throughout. So you would have actually got to see different people's reactions throughout the whole United States throughout the COVID period.
Yeah, it was absolutely fascinating. And also traveling during COVID, we were RVing and we were seeing national parks and there was not a lot of people around. So it was a very unique experience where people weren't really out and about. There were no large crowds aggregating. So it was really being able to see the United States in a whole new perspective. So it was wonderful.
Awesome. Very good. Now, I've already given a sort of a quick introduction to you, to the listeners, but what we'd love you to do is just to share a little bit more about your background, please.
Absolutely. I was originally a student of the sciences. I thought I was going to be a doctor. So I studied biology, chemistry, psychology in my undergrad years. And then at the very last minute, I just realized it wasn't for me. So I just went out and I just tried to get into the business world doing whatever I could. And my background really just by happenstance led me into process engineering early on in that journey. And I just fell absolutely in love. I just thought the combination of scientific principles with observation and business practice, it really just suited me. So I've actually spent my entire career from a very first job in mechanical engineering and process improvement, just studying process, learning about process. I went back to get my master's in business, and then I've been consulting with companies and then on my own for the last about 10 years and just really reading, learning, studying. I'm just a total geek about process improvement and process science, and that's my career in a nutshell.
And you have an organization, I think, called Trivel. Is that correct?
Yes. So Trivel is our latest venture and it's a software company. So whereas I started doing this process science work in a consulting company is still active. And then just recently we founded Trivel so we could scale some of our practitioner success into software solutions.
Excellent. So when you say processes and things like that and around business, can you give us like a layman's term so people can understand what do you actually mean by and what some of the things that you might do?
Sure. So process improvement, as you indicated, is very broad. And businesses themselves are nothing more than collections of processes. So we have a pretty wide scope. But normally the kind of work in layman's terms that we do are when people are realizing that they're having trouble scaling, they're having trouble with automation projects, they're having trouble controlling their costs as they add more headcount. So very practical things. And when people identify that the problem with that is just a general immaturity of process management, either they don't know their processes well enough or they need an expert to come in and help them draft or design new processes to reach their business objectives around those some of those things I talked about, those are the most common use cases. So a lot of it is doing documentation, analysis, trying to help them understand how their people and their technology can really come together in more efficient ways so they can meet their objectives.
Yeah, I love that how you just said that, people and technology to come together to make things more efficient and do things better way. And I think there's a lot of people who are afraid of that kind of stuff too, right? About, well, A, they don't know how to do the process thing and not sure how it works, but also maybe afraid of technology too. Do you find that at times?
Oh, I find that absolutely. And right now, it's a story of extremes, right? There's some people who are trying to protect the people aspect of business. And then there's a whole cohort now that's just obsessed with artificial intelligence, automation, and removing people from the business equation. But in reality, it truly is still a very much a harmony of having people and technology come together to really get your business where you want it to go. So like you said, people are afraid of it for various reasons on one side or the other and what it means for humanity in general. But mostly there's just a lot of misinformation about how a balanced business functions. And that's a lot of the coaching and the work that we do.
Yeah, nice. Nice. Very good. Now, tell me, Sam, for a lot of people today, they hear this thing out there called AI, artificial intelligence, things like that, and something like, oh, it's going to blow over. It's not going to be much. And others like, no, you need to be on board with this. What should people be thinking about as leaders who are listening to this episode? What should they be doing in relation to AI and it coming out more? Should they get more involved? Should they become quite savvy with it? Or should they just step back and let's see what happens?
Sure. So I'm going to go on a little bit of neither, really. And what I would always say to a leader is, you've got to understand your processes first.
Yeah.
And because the reason I say that is because going into the automation direction, going into the artificial intelligence direction, it's really context specific. It's not for everyone. It really depends on your business and depends on what you're doing. So understanding your process first, what are you achieving? How are you achieving it today? It will give you a hint about whether artificial intelligence, for instance, whether you should be on board or whether you should pause and wait until there's more mature functionality. So I think it really just depends because every business journey is different. And some industries and in some particular niches, you should get on board immediately. And some, it really truly will blow over because there's just no viable way to integrate it into certain business models.
Yeah, I like the way you're saying that because I think some people are going to react to it because they think they have to because everyone else and it's a buzzword. But I think the way you just said it is very good. So maybe pause, step back, reflect and see whether it's your processes and whether it's right for you. And then you can decide whether you want to do it. That's a great thing. Now, Sam, thanks for sharing about your background as well. The other thing I was going to ask you was, how did you get into leadership yourself?
Sure. For me, leadership was a journey that started with, I just felt like I could do things better. And when I mean better, I was in an early consulting part of my career where I was given other people's methodologies, given other people's opinions on how to better our client situations, how to better outcomes. And it just really wasn't resonating with me. So in a way, the first journey or step I took to being a leader was I had to step out and build my own company. It was really through, I think, my entrepreneurial journey where I figured out in order to have the space to learn and explore and to grow the way that I want to professionally, I have to be able to have the constraints lift and be able to do it on my own. And I think from there as an entrepreneur, leadership is a natural extension of setting an example and pioneering new things and just developing stuff that you want to share with people. And then at that point in my career, then anytime I worked on teams or I was leading client engagements, people looked at me to be the leader. It was what the role I was paid to be in and the role that people expected of me. So for me, it was a very organic and I think natural move into leadership. And it felt very comfortable for me. And I think a lot of the process work and principles that I've studied lend to good leadership style. I just actually gave a presentation recently called Process Leadership, where it's talking about being a leader that leads with process in mind. So to me, it's a very natural intersection. It's been a very enjoyable journey for my own personal career.
Process leadership, that's a cool way of putting it. Very good. This person can be alive or from history. Who's your favorite leader and why?
Sure. So my favorite leader is actually a man named Roman Hannes, and he's still alive, and he was a spiritual mentor of mine. And he's leading an entire organization, a lot of initiatives around just heart open mindfulness and just like being able to more authentically be yourself and connect with other people. And I would say he's probably the leader that I met who had the greatest impact on me and taught me the most in the last probably decade.
Okay, cool. And so he's alive still. So you've spent some time in workshops, I think, or probably in events and things like that. Have you spent some one-on-one time with him?
Not really. I've always had the pleasure of being in small groups with him, but I would not say I've had one-on-one time particularly.
So let's take the scenario that the two of you are sitting on a park bench having a coffee, a tea. I'm not sure what you might drink together, but just sitting there having a chat. Would there be one question that Sam would love to ask him?
Yeah. And I always would love to ask people like him questions. I'd say the one question that comes to mind is, what have you learned that surprised you in the last few years?
Very good. Yeah. I wonder what he would say.
Yeah, me too. Most people who you feel like have this really epic static presence, they've learned all they seem to know or need to know as the way they present their public persona. So I'm always trying to understand what's shocked you, what surprised you, what have you uncovered that's been meaningful? Because I think in that is probably the greatest insight, especially for people who are in the front leading.
Yeah. Sounds like you need to go and ask that question pretty quickly.
Yeah, probably to everybody that I respect, honestly.
Oh, seriously, yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a fantastic question because it's, and I like the piece that you said at the end as well, that's meaningful. Well, that's been meaningful, right? Because there's things that will shock us and surprise us and all that, but how's it been meaningful? What we've done with it, that's the key. Hey, look, the show here is called Leadership is Changing. When I mentioned that title or that statement, what does it mean for you, Sam?
For me, it means it's a positive thing. And I do think leadership is changing. And to me, it means there's a lot more people who are becoming more conscious and their leadership style is becoming more empathetic. It's becoming more vulnerable and it's leading through collaboration and not leading through prestige or leading through dominance. And I do think that's a trend that I've seen. And I try to also embody in my own career and leadership style. And that's what I think when people say leadership is changing, that's what my mind goes to.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. And when people start to think about leadership is changing and what you're seeing out there in the market, do you see any gaps? Do you think people are changing enough or do you think they need to change more or they're just, some people may be oblivious to it or what are you seeing out there?
I think people definitely need to change more. I do think there's a lot more room for radical change than there is for conservatism and just like sticking to what we know. And I do think part of that, the question of why, is a lot of people just do what's comfortable. A lot of people are still acting on business paradigms that they've been taught that was effective in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s. The world is changing much more rapidly now than it ever has before, just from like a rate of change perspective.
Yeah.
And I think we really need leadership to evolve as quickly, whereas the people who are leading and at the forefront, they need to be more conscious. They need to be more accountable and they need to not only be setting example, but also be leading with technical skills and soft skills that we've never really expected leaders to have in the past.
So you know how you said, or you just mentioned there about how it is getting faster, because the life is getting faster and it's changing a lot. I think technology is driving a lot of it. I think data, from a social perspective as well, it's changing business and all that. Based on what you do around process and things like that, the ability to be able to lead successfully in a fast-paced changing world, in addition to what you've already said, anything else that you think that people might need to think about? And in particular around processes and systems and tools and things like that.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that jumps out is, and this shouldn't be a surprise to most people, it's leading with data. And you hear that, but as a leader, it's still really easy. One of the oldest things that leaders are taught is leading with your intuition, leading with your gut, because leading with data is hard, especially in a leadership role, because you have to have a basic command of your tools, your people, your processes, where the data is coming from, how accurate is it. It's all the stuff that fast-moving leaders don't want to deal with. It's a tedium. But I really do think if you want to lead effectively in a faster-paced work environment, you can't just stick your finger in the air and just use your gut anymore like you could when things were smaller, when things were slower. There's just less room for mistakes in leadership positions. So I think leaders have to invest in being more well-rounded in all the skills needed in their industry to acquire good data, to understand that data, and to let that data mix with their intuition and lead consistent and accurate decision-making.
So data is very, it depends what school you went to, data or data, or maybe even country. So with data, and you're saying it's really important, I like what you said about leading with data. So an organization or a leader listening to this right now, what are some things that they might need to put in place in relation to understanding data? How's that going to actually help them as well build their business?
Sure. So the data that I'm referring to most when I think it, like when you think data, because it's so broad, is process data mostly. And that comes from my realm of expertise. But if you're a leader and for instance, your people are struggling and they're looking for you to help with a number of problems, they could be burned out. You can tell morale is flagging for any number of reasons. Your instinct may go to a lot of places. But when I say data, I'm talking about how much are they working? What is the actual processes they're engaged with? Where are the pain points? Because it's a lot of times leaders want to reach for what's on their table and the levers that they have easy access to pull. But a lot of times it's not as deep as you need to go, in my opinion, anymore, which is why when I say understand the data, don't just listen to your people, go on the floor and understand your people, understand their workday. That's that sort of empathy aspect that actually takes effort, which is what is my business actually doing, and get deep enough to understand it at a tactical level and then let yourself be informed to make decisions. Because if you just stay at that in the sort of ivory tower, the proverbial ivory tower, I think it's just becoming less acceptable to people because they demand understanding.
So it's actually quite interesting because it's before you said about how leadership is around the 50s, the 60s and the 70s, that kind of leadership. Then again, we've got the data in today's world as well. But what you just also just said is that if you to understand more and to go deeper with it and to understand it more, go onto the floor, talk to the people, listen to the people, which is really the stuff that we were talking about years ago around leadership, right? So I think it's a combination of those being brought together, which is great. But I think it's probably one of the biggest things that leaders can do from what I see as well, based on what you just shared, is that asking better questions to find out more and learn more and understand what's actually the root causes or what's actually going on.
Yeah, it's just not being so reactionary. Like, we're moving faster, but at the same time, I think smart leaders and mature leaders, they don't react. They listen, they understand, and they act consciously. And I think that garners a lot more respect now because, like you said, there's always been this idea that you should know your people. But I think people are less tolerant now than they were back in the day of leaders who are just leaders because they happen to be in that seat, and they don't get a lot of respect without substance. Like, young people today, they're not going to give you respect just because you're their elder. That's like a paradigm that I think is changing a bit. So it doesn't matter. If you want to be an effective leader, you have to understand that you have to gain people's respect. You have to gain their trust. And you have to really be, I think it's more of that push to servant leadership, honestly, which you have to serve to really lead. And I think that I try to embody that, and I've had a lot of good experience or outcomes rather with it.
Yeah, Sam, I like what you just said there about you don't get respect without having substance. And I think that's what exactly the way you said it then. But I think the substance is really quite key here. Listeners, what we're talking about here is, I'm going to give you my take on it, Sam. I'd love to get your take on it as well, that when sometimes I'm in meetings, or the listeners might be in meetings, or you might be in a meeting, there'll be people in the room that just talk. And you're like, what are they saying? And they just say a statement, but there's no substance below it. And I'm like, okay, so I'll ask another question to actually understand a little bit more. When you said that, tell me more, or help me understand more. I don't think enough leaders are doing this to actually understand more, to get that substance. What are you seeing? Is that something you see as well, or are you thinking about something totally different again?
No, I'm seeing that, and I would definitely concur. I think if you're a leader and you're the one speaking the most in the room, it indicates a leadership style that's not really listening or taking the data. It's the data aspect we're talking about, right? If you're speaking and you're not listening, you're just acting on the data that you happen to have at hand. And that's really, it's the same trend we're talking about, which is active listening, understanding, making sure that people are being heard and that they're contributing to decision-making, I think is more of a indicative of a strong leader today than ever before.
And I think that's what employees are, because their expectations of leaders have changed, I think. And I think that's what they're looking for as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And especially technology enabled a lot of that too, with you can give 360-degree feedback. You can give anonymous feedback. There's so many new ways to aggregate feedback and give people voices where years ago they may have felt uncomfortable doing so. And leaders are remiss if they don't employ those tools and at least give employees the channels to feel like they're part of the conversation.
There's a lot of tools out there from a technology perspective. There's so much out there right now. I think that people get lost in the finding that they think they have to have this tool and that tool. And it goes back to your point before about finding out what the processes are, where you're needing to focus on, and choosing the right things. If I was in my business today and you were talking to me about trying to do some things and to understand what my business is doing or where it's going, or I think what the word you used before is about scaling it. For a leader to scale things today, A, they probably have to get the right team on board. What else do you think they need to have?
The right team and the right technology. It's always going to be a combination out of the two for the most part. And you can't really sacrifice one for the other, even though a lot of times technology sell is, hey, you can reduce headcount. But if you go in with that expectation, it may be not panning out the way you think. I think in terms of, like you said, leading your organization to scale appropriately or grow appropriately, always baseline your process first, understand your value creation, understand your intentions. And because really when you scale a business, you're scaling intention. You're scaling value creation for your client base. It has nothing to do with scaling people or scaling technology. Those factors just enable a process intention. So if you don't understand that piece first, it's going to be very hard to decide which tech, which people, which combination. That piece is really, that's just shopping after you understand what you're supposed to be doing. So I think there's a disconnect in that narrative that a lot of people are struggling with.
So it's almost like if I'm going to bake a cake, I'm using an analogy here. If I'm going to bake a cake, I know what the in picture is. That's the cake that's in the picture. Gosh, I hope it turns out to be like that. So there's the cake. But then I know that I need to have the baker, which is me. I'm the person. But I also know that I probably need to have an oven. But there's a recipe. So the process is probably, there's process on how to actually pull that cake together. That's the process. And then there's the ingredients, which is part of that as well. Then the tools are also then the oven, the baking dish, the baking paper and all that sort of stuff. That's a real layman's term analogy of that. Is that what you're talking about? Is that some things that people might want to think about?
Yeah, it's a great start to the analogy. So I'll tweak it a little bit. The recipe itself is the process in this analogy. So that's the design. It's somebody's intention and instruction telling you how to combine yourself and your labor and tools to create the cake as an outcome. So if you think about what that process represents in that case, that recipe will usually give you a good indication of what tools you should be using, oven, pans, mixing tools, times, things like that. But there's actually probably an infinite amount of ways that cake you've made. It could be made by a robot. It could be made on an oven, like made of sticks and stones. It could be made using a blowtorch. You could use infinite substitutions for ingredients to get a similar cake. That's all in the recipe's intention. That's the process part. So you have to always figure out the process first, but know that the solutions can be extremely variable. So which solutions you end up picking to move into your recipe to actually be your process design, that's where it's just a factor of what's available, what is a good ROI on a combination of things, because there's a lot of flexibility there. But if you don't, you're trying to make a cake, then you're not going to be able to write the process to begin with. So,
Yeah, do you know that you are going to make a cake, and what does the cake look like? What kind of cake do you want? And all that sort of stuff, right?
Does the customer want to eat that cake?
Yeah.
That's the question you should be asking.
Actually, that's a very good point, right? So it's also understanding, and the way I say it is understanding your customer with understanding your audience. What do they want? Yeah, very good. Because no point in creating a chocolate cake when people in the family or people around you don't like chocolate. Hey, that's a bit of a clue there too. Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Hey, Sam, if I was to get you to get your crystal ball out now and start thinking about the future, where do you see leadership being in 5 years?
I see leadership being, if you continue this trend of the opinion I stated, which is leadership is really somebody who can read the data and lead with data and be a conduit of good decision-making with all the resources they have available to them, which is so expansive today, then leadership is going to continue to evolve to be basically driving a more efficient, a more productive workforce, a workforce that's inclusive of more and more technology, automation, artificial intelligence solutions. And that's really what's going to be able to separate the best leaders, the ones who are able to pull all those levers properly and optimize their workforce with all the tools and human capital available to them. And that's going to be a lot more maturity around what is the data? What does the acquisition of that data look like? What are the different sources? I think leaders are going to have to be much more versatile across lots of different domains than they had been. And they're going to be running a much more automated workforce as the years progress.
And if the leaders listening to this right now are thinking, gosh, all this data stuff, it sounds scary. Where do I go? So Sam, where can people go to start working with people around data? What kind of people should they be engaging?
Sure. So the kind of data I'm talking about, the best place to go is your employees first. So the people that you already have around you. So if you're a leader in a business now, just start asking, how do you measure your work, right? If I'm a team of 10, I should be asking 9 people, how are you measuring success? That's the start of a data conversation. And then making sure that it makes intuitive sense to you. Because when we say data as a leader, it doesn't mean I need you in Excel actually punching data or working spreadsheets. You've got to get the right information so that your business can be measured and understood in a quantitative way. And that starts with your people, the people on the ground who are actually generating that data. And then from there, if you're looking for a more tactical answer about data specialist or data this or that, that's like down the road when you actually have more maturity. But yeah, that's my answer. The first thing is the data that's available to you, understand that data first in a way that makes sense to you and start synthesizing. That's the key.
Yeah, cool. So the other stuff around the data, because a lot of people get wound up about it, that's further on down the road, as you just said. When there's maturity, then you can look at it. But you're great. It's probably sitting right in front of you right now. That's what Sam's saying. It's sitting there right in front of you. You just need to ask the right questions. Synthesize it. Is that the word you used?
Synthesize, yep. Yeah, if you've got 6 different types of data and your people just lying around, your job as a leader is they may all be seeing one type of data in their day.
Right.
Your job is to synthesize that and say, what's the insights I can draw from looking at all the data at the same time? And it could be at a very rudimentary level, but that's where leadership adds insight. That's where they add value.
I think that whole topic is so fascinating, what you've been sharing today. Sam, if people are wanting to get a hold of you, where should they go?
So the best place to find me at now is Truvle.com, T-R-U-V-L-E.com. That's where I'm spending most of my time these days, building new process tools, helping people try to get a handle on this data we're talking about. But generally, that's the best way to reach out. And you can always find me at Sam Drawshack on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. Well, Sam, it's been a real pleasure talking to you today. So thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Well, there you go, listeners. The time here is about process leadership. It's about leading with process, but also leading with data. I think it was so strong in what Sam just shared there as well. And if you're needing to know more, get on the floor. Understand what your employees are saying, what your staff are saying, because it's going to be right there. Because people won't respect things without substance. Hey, it's been great being with you. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Leadership is Changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsos. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change, inspiring executives and leaders to adapt and lead a bigger game in a fast-moving world.